Today is December 23rd, 2009, and instead of talking about sex, for once, what I'd like to use is this meeting and our next meeting to focus on two really, really central themes in life and in personal growth and certainly in spiritual practice, which is to say letting go and letting in, right? Those two great activities, which are very timely given the rhythm of coming to the end of the year in a cultural way. Exhaling, where we let go. Inhaling, where we take in. Releasing, which creates a space into which we can receive. So I thought that today we could focus on different themes and practices of letting go. And then next meeting, we could really focus on what it is we want to invite in for the coming year. The last decade has been referred to in numerous circles as a horrible one. I don't know if that's entirely true. It's had its good moments, for me at least, but you know, whatever it was about last year, let's see what we can open up to for the current year, the coming one. All right, so that's the focus. To ground that in a Dharma perspective, it's interesting how many themes there are of letting go in Buddhist teaching. And like everything in Buddhist teaching, it's not to be just believed or bought in some credulous way, but rather to be inspected in terms of whether letting go in certain skillful and wholesome ways actually promotes freedom from suffering for oneself and other people. So, for example, there's this fairly well-known quote from Ajahn Chah, who is a major wellspring, really, of the teaching stream that runs through Spirit Rock Meditation Center and the Vipassana Theravadan tradition in the West. And Ajahn Chah said once, you know, if you let go a little, you'll have a little happiness. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of happiness. And if you let go completely, you'll be completely happy. And if you think about the Four Noble Truths, first being the truth of suffering, that suffering does exist. It's not that life in its entirety is suffering, or that there's only suffering, but the suffering really does exist. And that the source, let me say it a little differently, that a certain amount of discomfort, I'll use that word, is inevitable. Old age, disease, and death, the Buddha, you know, included that in his definition of suffering. More modern interpretations might simply call that pain. There is pain, physical pain, inevitable physical pain in this life. There's also emotional pain, because we're social animals who love and care about how others see us and care about what happens to those we care about. We naturally feel pain when they are harmed or threatened. Those are what the Buddha called the inevitable first darts of human existence. Probably animal existence as well, although they don't have the development, really, of our capacity in particular to feel emotional pain. Those are the first darts. No one gets through this life without encountering some first darts. But then there are all the second darts we throw ourselves, all our reactions to the first darts of life. In other words, the ways that we get upset about old age, disease, and death. And also often the way we react to situations that actually don't even have a first dart in them. You know, we're in traffic. A lot of people around us. We're still going to get to work on time. No brick has dropped on our foot. No kid is screaming in our ear. We're just in rush hour traffic. Right? Or you come home and you've been working really hard, and the house is a mess. Now, is that a first dart at all, really? It's just clutter. It's just stuff. I mean, it is what it is, right? And then we react to it. Often, in fact, we react with second darts when there's no dart at all to be found. In other words, after somebody gives us a compliment, let's say, or tells us they really care about us, or we notice some good quality in ourselves, and then the next thing you know, we're mad at ourselves because we're not that way all the time. Right? Those are the second darts we throw ourselves. And the root origin of those second dharmas, which is the fundamental insight of the Buddha and his diagnosis as a great physician, as he described himself on occasion. The root of those second dharmas is some form of craving and clinging. The opposite of which is what?
Letting go.
Letting go. Right? The opposite of the craving and clinging that lead to second dart fusillades with ourselves pinned to the dartboard, right? The opposite of that action of throwing darts is letting go. Letting go. Opening the hand, not clenching as me, myself, and I, not reacting with ill will, not getting greedy, not closing our eyes, turning away, burying our head in the sand like the ostrich. All forms of different kinds of clinging and craving. Instead, we let go. We let things be as they are. We don't add insult to injury. We let go in lots of ways. Sometimes people think that letting go means putting up with injustice or just, you know, adopting the Hell's Angel motto, right? Live fast, die young, leave a good-looking corpse, right? No. One kind of letting go is letting go of self-consciousness or letting go of fear about what will happen if we speak up and tell someone we love them and wish that they loved us too, for example. Many kinds of letting go. Right? So I'd like to do a kind of a series of little mini reflections and actions tonight to embody this kind of letting go and then talk about it. All right? So first off, if you're, and by the way, you can ignore anything I'm saying, period, as well as any of the suggestions I'm offering. So for starters, if you don't mind, take a really, you know, take half a dozen really big breaths. And after each one, really let yourself exhale and notice what it's like to really let go in the exhalation. So let's just do that for half a minute here. And be mindful of letting go. Is it pleasant or unpleasant to let go?
Pleasant.
If it is, yeah. I think most of us would say, for me, it's certainly that way as well. That's true too. Let's do another one now. How about making a fist? With either hand, take your pick. Imagine in that hand you are holding things you are mad at. You don't like them. Political figures, situations, whatever it is. And then when you like, and let's do this again a few times, imagine holding your hand out and open over a great void, like a cliff or the ocean or God, and then whenever you want, letting go. What's that like? It could be a condition in your life that is not a permanent condition, or maybe it's a condition in your life and what you're mad about is, or what's in your anger and your fist is your reactions to that condition. Right? And whenever you want, consider that condition, let it go. How about one more time, everyone? Pick something, pick it up, hold it in your hand. You don't like it, you've had it with that, and then you let it go. What's that like, to let it go? Do one more. This time, pick a belief that you hold or that tends to arise in your mind. It could be a belief like, no one will love me if I have pimples. Or it could be a belief like, I've got to get XYZ done, you know, by a certain time. Or a belief like, I can smoke a lot of dope and it'll still be okay. Whatever it is, pick that belief, all right? Whatever your belief is that you, and you know deep down is not true. You know deep down is not true. Okay, so hold that belief in your mind. And then at some point, say to it and yourself, that's just not true. And as you do that, imagine that that belief or thought just kind of pops like a bubble bursting and it's gone. And if you need to do it a few times, it's okay. So let's take a few moments here quietly inside your head. And you can do it with more than one thought if you'd like to. Hold it, and then think to yourself, that's just not true. And pop it like a bubble. Things that come across in your mind as have to or should are good candidates. What's that like, to let go of a thought? It's just not true. Any comments so far? Anything you've noticed in your own experience? These three movements of letting go.
There is a sense of release.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. What's release like?
There's more space. There's less energy fixated.
Yeah. Huh. Thank you. Yeah.
I found when I popped that thought and let it go, I found myself looking for another one because I have the energy for it. It's like all revved up to do that, and now that one's gone. Okay, I'll find another one.
Yeah. Oh, to let go of or to replace it with?
Replace it with.
Yeah, where would we be without all that shit?
Yeah, it's like, okay, my personality is sort of defined by that, right? This, I always have to do this. If I don't have to do that, how am I
going to
define myself?
That's next week. So we take in. And so we release and then replace. I feel like personal growth or practice really has three fundamental movements in it. One is where we step in or open up to. We step into the material. We allow ourselves to feel it, to have it. We let it be there. We name it. We own it. We do those various things. We bring mindfulness to it. And then at some appropriate point, we shift into the second phase, which is releasing. Right? And then after some time, then we move into the third phase, which is replacing. And they don't all go always in sequence, you know, there are different steps. Or in the act of replacing, you discover some impediment to replacing it, and so you release the impediment and you work with that. But that, So we've got three major movements. And I find people tend to skip over the first one, the one about where you just got to feel it for a while. You got to experience it. You got to be in the body, in it, whatever it is. Not flooded with trauma, ideally, but otherwise in it. And then people often don't do the third one. We don't marinate in the replacement to that which we've released. And that's very important. The Buddha really stressed the importance of cultivation. He said, the mind takes the shape of what it rests upon. Right? So, as we let go and take in, the mind takes the shape of that action, which is a beautiful action. And then also as that which we take in, and particularly abide increasingly as in cultivate more and more as our own character, the mind rests upon that and takes its shape. Right? It's important. You may be different from many people I've known, including myself, but the first and the third step are particularly useful to pay attention to. Okay, now let's take a look at a few other kinds of ways of letting go. And I'd like to run through the five aggregates, if I could, in Buddhism. The Buddha said basically that everything, bottom line, falls into one of these five piles. Aggregates means piles, skandhas or heaps. It has that quality of sort of disenchantment embedded in it. They're the heaps. You probably know this, but I'll just have a quick recap. The first heap is form, which is all of materiality and its incredible, magnificent proliferation. Quarks, dark matter, rays of light, bowling balls, bricks, chocolate cupcakes, form, and the barest apprehension of form. That's the first aggregate. And then second comes feeling, which means not emotion, but whether our experience, the rest of the aggregates are about experience. So whether the experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that's feeling. Third aggregate is perception, which involves memory often. What is it? Right? Fourth aggregate are all the mental formations. Mental contents, thoughts, emotions, psychodynamics, personality structure, your enneagram point, all that. Mental formations. Self arises in the formations. There's not much self in the first three aggregates, which is really interesting. And then the fifth aggregate is moment after moment of consciousness. Not consciousness as an eternalist field, because the Buddha was very, very direct about undermining people's clinging to consciousness as some ultimate capital C consciousness that they could then attach to. But he really stressed that consciousness arises moment to moment based on conditions, that it's not unconditional. It arises in the condition of the meeting of one of three things: a particular sense object, a particular sense organ, and that particular sense consciousness. Okay? So those are the aggregates. So part of the deep ultimate practice is to not cling to, in other words, to let go of each one of those aggregates moment to moment to moment to moment. It's a fundamental matter of Buddhist practice. You don't have to do it, right? But that's what the Buddha taught. And he taught it as a method, as a means to the great end of freedom from suffering for all beings. So let's play with that a little bit. So imagine for the moment, and you can do this picking something like, you know, the carpet in front of you. It's easier to do it if you don't use your own body initially. And just a physical object. And let's do form first, where you're with it. And then see if you can just imagine it going and being all right with that. Just letting it go. So that, at least in awareness, it doesn't arise in the next moment. It may arise, but there's not attachment to it being present in the next moment. This is kind of an advanced practice, but see what it's like, just even for a second or two, if you can have an experience of that. In a literal way, the carpet, the rug may not be here in the next moment. I can. Okay. Kind of an interesting thing to do, isn't it? It's weird. It's hard to do it, actually. But if you do it, you can kind of have this momentary sense of, wow, I don't have to attach to form. I don't have to attach to materiality or the very bare registration of materiality. It's there. I'm not against it, but I don't have to grab onto it. Did anybody have any momentary fleeting experience of that? Yeah, you did? What was that like?
Millisecond.
What was that millisecond like?
Well, it brought to mind, I think, something you said last week about a man who said, this beautiful cup, I see it already.
Ajahn Chah, same guy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And beyond that, actually not being there at all because of it, you know, it will eventually mm-hmm. diffuse, all of its molecules will be gone out of that form.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's somewhat comforting to realize that's the case of everything.
I got really excited.
I mean, it helps you. It helps you get to not cling to it.
Yeah. That's great. Anybody else?
My experience was that I was worried about the room temperature. It would be cold about the room. That was my first thing. It would be cold to walk on the concrete floor.
Right.
Without the carpet there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? No big? Yeah.
I felt less thinking. There's no possible way that I was responsible for anything. So kind of freeing. And remembering anything, integrating anything, and you know, there was the mind was not involved. So
that's great. All right, here's another one. If you will, feeling, you know, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. You know, again, for just a few moments here, let your eyes sort of move around the room without being, you know, not looking at other people. And notice whether what your eyes light upon is pleasant or unpleasant or neutral to you. And then notice that as your eyes move, the pleasant or unpleasant of the previous moment disappears. And see if you can keep letting go of the pleasant or unpleasant of the previous moment without attachment to it. So there's no clinging to the pleasant or resistance of the unpleasant. Sometimes we lose track, and then just remind yourself again to try it again. Okay, what was that like? Letting go of the pleasant, you know, as you moved past it. And were you able to experience even a bit of that? Kind of letting go of the pleasant or letting go of the unpleasant as the gaze moved on.
I experienced the clinging actually more than the letting go. Clinging, but it was actually giving kind of voice to the clinging. Whereas before I wasn't aware, you know. I act so frequently without my awareness to what I'm holding on to or shying away from.
Okay, good. That would be like clinging to consciousness in a way.
Or being unconscious, unconsciously clinging.
Clinging to clinging. Well,
that's it.
I didn't want to give up clinging and both positive and negative. I didn't like the idea that I would come back to it and it'd be different. I felt a little bit lost with that.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. One thing we often discover when we try to let go is how much we don't, how much we cling. And then you have to see for yourself, does it increase or decrease your happiness to cling to the pleasant, especially over the long haul? Right. Yeah.
I've had a practice lately because I notice how opinionated I am. And how quick I am to have judgments about everything, about anything. It's not even important. Mm-hmm. And I'm having a reaction or a judgment. So I'm trying to notice that, and I just say to myself, oh, look at myself judging. But not in a judging way of me, just, oh, look, I did it again. Oh, look, I did it again. And so that shifts my awareness from whatever I was grappling about to, wow, my mind does this a lot. And then I move into the awareness of, well, at least I'm noticing. And then I let go of the opinion,
yeah,
or the complaint, because I've moved into a different part of the process. And I'm really enjoying that.
Wonderful.
But isn't the act itself putting a condition on it, of acknowledging it?
Say that, say more.
Well, you're creating a condition by acknowledging that. That's what I've noticed.
What's the that?
Okay, so you're looking at the emotion itself, all right? Or you're watching it arise, and you're watching your reaction to it.
Oh.
But even that is flavoring the conditions.
The watching is.
The watching,
yeah,
itself.
That's,
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets tricky. I mean, do we start getting even attached to mindfulness?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Or we start clinging to mindfulness, yeah,
yeah.
Or our beliefs. The Buddha was very interesting when he talked really about the highest, you know, the last bits before you're totally enlightened, and he really stresses even there, often when you have to let go of is the Dharma. You know, and you even have to let go of the desire to let go of, in a way. Just like you said, because that...
You're,
yeah, exactly.
Still creating conditions,
yeah,
at that point.
And that aim kind of constitutes an aimer, you know, a self, in effect. Yeah. On the other hand, in the lower foothills of the Great Himalayas, where most of us are slogging slowly uphill, it's an intermediate, you know, good vehicle to bring mindfulness to things and to, you know, mobilize the intention. So now I'd like to bring it really close to home. And have you, if you will, think about, you know, one or two or even three conditions in your life or personal behaviors or viewpoints or attitudes that you'd really like to let go of. In other words, if, you know, like you had your Matrix moment, I always think of the Matrix moment, and I always forget, is it a red or the blue pill? But that character, what's the name of the guy?
Neo's
offered, but who's the guy? Morpheus. You know, your own personal version of Morpheus, who might look like, for me, it looks sometimes like the Flora, Fauna, and Merriweather, whatever, you know, the fairies in like the Disney Cinderella movie, something like that. He says, look, here's the blue pill. If you take the blue pill, it will eliminate one, two, or three things out of your head. Okay, you just won't want that thing anymore, or you won't care about that anymore, you won't be upset about that anymore, or you'll stop not doing that thing you really know you ought to do, and, you know, okay? What would be your list? You look hard, in other words, at causes and conditions that led to your suffering in 2009 that are actually under your control to some significant extent, what would you really like to just drop, you know, at the doorway to 2010? Let's just reflect on that quietly for a minute. You can write if you like, or just reflect on it. One, two, or three things. You might even ask, as you reflect, what might be the key log in the jam, the one little thing that is kind of at the heart of the matter in terms of your own mental activity, you know, your own attitude, your outlook, your assumptions, the dreaded experience you're avoiding. What is that, perhaps just one key log where if you could pluck it out, the whole river would start flowing in a wonderful way? So, do you have that one thing, at least one thing, that you know would, if you let go of it, in other words, it would really reduce the causes of your suffering and maybe the suffering of others, and it would really increase the causes of happiness for you? Do you have one thing to let go of that is in your mind that you actually could let go of, really? You might have to practice with it. You might forget. You know, might have to be reminded as the year goes on to keep letting go of it. You know, somebody once said, the most important thing is to remember the most important thing. Right? You might need to keep remembering the most important thing. But what is that one thing for you? Does everyone have it, maybe? Most people, at least? Nod, if you... Okay, good. So now here's the next question. Just focusing on one thing to let go of. What are the causes and conditions of letting go of that? And that would also help you keep letting go of it. What factors, what resources, what help? Friends, posting a yellow sticky on the dashboard of your car, you know, committing to an exercise buddy that always meets you at 9 o'clock at the gym, or you know, just getting the cookies out of the pantry, whatever. What would help you keep letting go of that one thing? It might honestly be a sense of being with people, either out here in the world or inside in your mind, who love and care for you, and nourishing and lighting up the kind of attachment, affiliating systems in the brain. It could help you care enough about yourself to keep letting go of that thing, or to give you the strength to keep letting go of that thing. Maybe imagine sitting with the Buddha, literally. The common language in the suttas is set to one side. So there you are, sitting to one side of the Buddha. Would that help you keep letting go of that one thing? Maybe setting your intention every day, as soon as you remember to. Your first waking thoughts, increasingly, to establish your intention related to that thing. Other things perhaps as well, but certainly that one thing. All right. And then last step, and then we can talk about it. Can you imagine some of the positive rewards that will come to you from letting go of that one thing and continuing to let go of it? absent those rewards is the sense of freedom from clinging. Less clinging, because you're letting go. And if you can, visualize yourself over the course of the year, all 12 months to come, continuing to let go of this one thing. What kind of a sweet year would that be? Once you keep letting go of this one thing. Let that feeling of being motivated sink in. Being motivated, actually, sustained in your motivations to let go. Keep letting go of this one thing. The year unfolds. All right. Any comments? Anybody get to anything good?
I guess as an aside, it, I should give up not seeing the Matrix.
That's it. There are a few cultural necessities. Yeah, you should get see the first one.
Everybody seems to know that.
Okay. How about anybody, like what, if you're willing to say, like an example of something to let go of? Yeah.
Take care of a mother, 92 years old. It can be a really emotional drain a lot of times. But then, I feel judgment comes creeping up. Well, you know, it's the right thing to do. Be there once a week or twice a week and bring her home. But the responsibility is really big and the emotional drain that it takes for the rest of the time. How do you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's a dualistic feeling of you're doing the right thing as a daughter, be there because nobody else is there for her, but at the same time, it takes away the creativity for other things.
Yeah. Sometimes
judgment comes in there. You're not good enough. You know, the expectational role. Because how would you want someone else to treat you when you're at that age?
Sure, and it may be more than judgment. It might be a deep moral sense that's very wholesome, too. Mm-hmm. And I'll just offer this comment then maybe hear from someone else, too, that I find in these kind of very complex, messy situations, as we sense into them, we often sense down to some nubbin that creates suffering or needless suffering or complication in this complex situation. And we resolve it at a deeper level, almost. I mean, it's posed as a dilemma, right? Fulfill my duty or pursue my creativity, right? And that's the classic way things like this often are posed. And yet at a deeper level, we often find there's some holding on to a view or some attitude or stance about it all, that if we were to let go of that or release on that, would then, you know, let things open out. That might be possible here. All right, some other people had their hands up? Yeah.
Wrestling with kind of an assumption about this aspect in which I'm unlovable. What if I just, you know, let go of that, and then, you know, like Tarnia was saying, then there's this empty space that opens up where that used to live.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, all I have, you know, to populate that empty space is my standing saying, willing to learn. And just the thought that, oh, I could just walk on without carrying this thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought, well, you know, all I have is this, just this thought of, oh, I could proceed without this. But I thought, you know, this negative assumption, it's a thought too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a thought that's like the ship that has been sailing so long, it's got a lot of barnacles on it. It's never gone into dry dock and gotten all that, you know, it's just accumulated all this weight, you know.
Right.
Really, it's just an assumption.
Yeah.
And the openness of, well, what would it be like to just walk down the trail, you know, having left this, you know, by the side of the trail and just walk on without it?
Yes.
I don't know yet.
All right. Okay, thank you. And then what would maybe help you keep letting go of that particular flavor of feeling, you know, thinking one is unlovable? Yeah. That's great. Steve, yeah.
Well, I was watching the trailers for Avatar. It looks like it's going to be better than The Matrix.
That was your contribution here in this weighty manner?
Okay. So the main character is this person that's paralyzed from the waist down. And then he gets transported into an alien's body and goes into an alien's world, right, to save that world.
Yeah.
And so he goes from being paralyzed to being kind of a fully functional body. And so the analogy I was thinking about is kind of the lack of self-compassion kind of paralyzes us in many ways, where it's much harder to give. But once you move beyond that, you can give more and live life more fully if you're a little easier on yourself. So it was really resonating with what you're saying.
Yeah, great. Yeah. I mean, the classic Buddhist, I had a spiritual teacher, Adida, for quite some time, who had a very articulate, no longer alive, and he said, you know, it's interesting, if you, for example, have this bag in your kitchen that is chock full, even kind of overflowing, it's got grease stains on it, it's sort of smelly, and flies are buzzing around it, you know, as soon as you recognize what it is, it's easy to do, you know what to do. Oh, garbage, take it out. Right? And it's pretty straightforward to let it go. So without all the connotations, but the essence remaining, I mean, the garbage, if you will, in Buddhism is greed, hatred, and delusion, the three poisons. You know, greed broadly defined as grasping and coveting and envy and, you know, drivenness for and things like that. It often comes at us in many funny ways. It's not just for the shot of heroin. My main object of clinging is lining out my tasks on my to-do list. That's my main form. You know, clinging comes in many forms, so you got to watch it. And then there's hatred, aversion in all its forms. You know, anger, pushing away. Fear is a kind of hatred. Fear is a form of aversion. I think a lot about, you know, the next book I'll write, and I have these various titles floating through my mind and various topics. We haven't settled on one yet, but I thought of doing one called The Paranoid Trance. I just feel like we're trapped in a paranoid trance given to us by evolution and then really worked by modern media and the endless stress, sympathetic arousal we get from all